On today's program, we have Gaysu Pannell. She is a professor in the School of Teaching and Learning at The Ohio State University. She has extensive experience in classroom teaching and research and in developing approaches to literacy education. She has received the International Reading Association's Albert J. Harris Award for research and the Charles A. Dana Foundation Award for her contributions to the field of education. And she is also a member of the Reading Hall of Fame. Together with Irene Fountas, she's authored a lot of books, videos, and websites with Heinemann that are pretty much considered standards in the field of literacy instruction and staff development. Their latest innovation is the Fountas and Pannell Benchmark Assessment System, and I got a chance to speak with her, and here is the interview that just happened a couple days ago. Check it out. I know that you're really busy finishing up the Leveled Literacy Intervention System, in addition to completing a new professional book, When Readers Struggle, so we really appreciate your time. So, and before we start the interview, I being in Arizona and being an Arizona State guy, never really understood the in The Ohio State University. So could you explain to the listeners before we even start that aren't Buckeyes, what in the world that's about?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure the original intent of that, but it is the legal and official name of the university, and the rumor has it that it went back to the time when it was created, and it was meant to distinguish it from other
I get it. So you guys aren't up to something sneaky over there, like trying to take over the world or something. You guys are just being honest.
No.
It just, okay, just wanted to make sure about that, because I never really understood that. But you guys got a great school there, so you guys can pull it off. But could you give us a little info about what you're up to with these two new resources?
Well, Irene Fountas and I have been working for many, many years on classroom initiatives. We've both been working with struggling readers, and what we see is that there needs to be a coherence in the programs that we offer children in our schools. And we have produced many publications that attempt to help classroom teachers not only implement research-based practices, but achieve a kind of coherence across the curriculum. For example, they're teaching for the same goal. They're teaching for strategic actions in the brain across instructional contexts. For example, in interactive read-aloud, they engage children in intentional conversation and work to develop the systems of strategic action that we have written about. And those same read-aloud texts served as mentor texts in writing workshops. So having worked with that classroom piece and having had our many long years of work in reading recovery and small group intervention, we decided to create a systematic, structured small group intervention for children in, our intention was grades K to 3, but we've had some good success in special education and with any children who need to learn to read to level N. So we have created some resources for teachers in terms of 300 original children's books. We didn't write these. We worked with authors and illustrators, but we very carefully calibrated them to be very true to the level so they could provide a ladder of support for struggling readers. And to go along with this level of literacy intervention, we have written a professional book called When Readers Struggle, Teaching That Works. And this is a resource for teachers. It contains the background theoretical material, the research base, and we hope will be very helpful to all teachers, whether they're using our leveled literacy intervention or not. We hope it will help them have more powerful interactions with struggling readers.
Well, I know that besides these two resources that you guys are working on getting out there, I have read, and many of the listeners have read, your book, Guiding Readers and Writers, which is geared towards an intermediate grade, like 3 through 6, maybe 3 through 8. And we've all read your book, Guided Reading, Good First Teaching for All Students. And a lot of the listeners are wondering how you feel about using a workshop approach, like a reading workshop approach in the primary grades, like you present in the Guiding Reading, Readers and Writers. And do you favor the use of centers as opposed to the workshop model in the primary grades, and why is that?
Well, you know, I think it needs to be a teacher decision. Some teachers work really, really well with centers, and young children love them, and it takes a lot of organization. We have put out a really nice videotape of a wonderful teacher who is just so organized, showing how to run centers and label the centers, but sometimes the centers just aren't possible. Maybe your class size is too high. Maybe it just doesn't work for you as a teacher. You can always provide for productive reading and writing activities at their tables for young children. Mm-hmm. The workshop approach that we describe in Guiding Readers and Writers usually begins about mid-year in second grade, when children can sustain themselves with longer periods of reading. Mm-hmm. So if you're working with grade one children, you'd need to provide more productive activities for them in their at their tables or desks, boxes of books to read, a word study activity application to do, some writing to do or drawing. It's not very hard to do. So I think you can go either way.
You mentioned word study in that, and I was curious, you have a book solely on word studies called Word Matters, and I was wanting your input on what is the role, if you could briefly try to sum up, of word study in the classroom, and why is it important?
Well, word study, and some people call this phonics. We call it phonics and word study, because phonics is the teaching children about the relationships between letters and sounds. And word study goes further because they learn about prefixes, suffixes, you know, the structure of words. It's a very critical part of a literacy program. We have created phonics lessons for grades K, 1, 2, and 3. And 3 is called word study lessons. So that teachers can, by spending not very long, you know, 5-10 minutes a day, showing children something interesting about language and the way it works. Kids are fascinated by words.
They really are.
Some people spend their whole lives studying words. They're interesting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this daily mini lesson, an application activity where children are hands-on, sorting words, writing words, playing games with words, that's really valuable. Is it sufficient for a literacy program? Of course not. But it needs to happen daily. So they have this direct input for words. And then we have identified 9 categories of learning about phonics and word study. And the last one is called word-solving actions, which includes teaching children how to directly apply their knowledge to writing words, to reading them in continuous print. So it doesn't take the place of reading every day, but it's very important learning.
And you mentioned that you have something for grades K through 3, if I got that right. But I'm under the impression that some educators and some parents or some think that once they get beyond the phonics level, maybe grades 4, 5, 6, all the way up through high school, that word study – I'm asking, is word study in 6th, 7th grade – something that needs to be done as well?
I think it would be fantastic. Word study needs to happen all the way up, because what writers and readers can now do is look at the history of words. the Greek and Latin roots, the fascinating ways words have changed over the years. So we have, Irene and I have not created lessons yet for grades 4, 5, and 6, but we get asked about them, and it may be that we will at some point in time work toward some very sophisticated, the kind of study that semanticists do about, you know, looking at words.
Right.
So it's really important, and it will help high school kids enormously if they know the roots of words and they can figure out the meaning of words from their structure and their parts.
This is kind of going off topic, but we have a lot of listeners that are new to teaching or still in college waiting to be a teacher, and I wanted to get from you, because we all respect your work so much, what do you think would be the most important thing to focus on considering literacy instruction that a teacher that is just starting out and doesn't have the foundation of knowledge that you need, what should be something that they should start out just focusing on, in your opinion?
Oh, wow.
That is a loaded question, I know, but...
Yeah, there's so much to learn. One of the background comments is, if you're just starting out as a teacher, you only have a fraction of the knowledge you need. So you need to create for yourself an ongoing learning. A new teacher needs to know how to get the routines of the classroom going. If you want to create for your children a set of predictable routines so that when they come in the classroom, they know what they're supposed to do, they know where everything is, and they know what's expected of them.
And that's throughout, the grades, right? Not just in primary grades, but throughout.
Oh, my, yes. Yeah. Yes. It's a little harder in the primary grades. But,
yes.
But it's throughout the grades. Get a schedule. Stick to it. In our book, Guiding Readers and Writers, we have a table called the first 6 weeks of school, and I know many new teachers who have followed that table and done...
Me being one of them, no. By the way. I actually have done that, and it did help me a lot, and I wish that all books written about reading would have some sort of idea about how to start it off, because there's so much to take in when you're starting off. And this is my third year, and I still feel clueless. You know, like I'm researching all the time, reading everything I can, and there's just so much to learn that it can be intimidating sometimes, to be honest. But
oh, it sure can. So, you know, take that first 6 weeks, really get the routines down. Don't vary it. Be very consistent. Have a very organized classroom. And at that point, then, children feel very secure. And then you can begin to say, okay, now I'm going to think about the language I'm using with them, my interactions, you know, the different instructional contexts. But you've got to get the routines established. And in Guiding Readers and Writers, I think we have the first 20 days of reading workshop, and that really, really works. It tells you what to teach them every day for 20 days. Sometimes you can spend a little longer, 25 or 30. So you get that reading workshop routines going. And in Teaching for Comprehension and Fluency, we have, I think, the first 35 days of literature are book clubs. So it's got to be a very systematic, routinized kind of approach. Now, within that, of course, you're having these wonderful conversations with kids. So it's not as if someone's handing you a script.
Right.
It's that you need the routines established.
Well, it's funny you mentioned script, because my next question that I was I really wanted your feedback, and I'm sure you hear this every day everywhere you go, but what would you say to teachers that are highly restricted to teaching with just solely a basal program, that may not be given the freedom to try out some of these innovative ideas concerning literacy instruction? And what would be some advice you could give teachers in an environment that promotes solely sticking with the adopted resource?
Well, many teachers are in this situation. I know that. And yet, many core programs or basal programs also have the option of some leveled readers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. I guess, bottom line, nothing can stop you from having wonderful conversations with children about books. So hold on to that. And you can, of course, there, look at the interstices of the day. That means a little 10 minutes or 15 minutes or, you know, between things. Accomplish your program, but find time for a quick writing workshop mini lesson. Find time for students to write. Just look at the schedule, and creative teachers can find some time for, particularly if the actually the Basel sometimes provides for, you know, leveled reading. So you can do some guided reading, but you can also use that anthology for all it's worth, because many of the selections might be good for reading aloud. There's poetry in there. They've tried to make it appeal. So take the anthology and look at it and see what the learning potential is. And there probably are ways you can accomplish your goals in terms of using that core system and also adding some things that really add to children's enjoyment of literacy. For example, doing a little interactive writing after a read aloud, that kind of thing.
Well, Gay, I want to respect your time, and so I, as you probably don't know, there is a segment of the show here on the Teacher's Life called The Story of the Day, and this is a part of the show where a story is told concerning life in a classroom, and we were wondering if you could share with us just a brief story.
Well, I was observing one of my friends using our the assessment system that we that Irene and I did, and there's a book called Our Teacher, Mr. Brown, and it's a very simple little book. And the little child was reading it, and then my friend Diane said, "Well, what do you think about that school?" And he said, "Well," he said, "it was I don't know this boy very well, but," he said, "I really feel I know Mr. Brown."
I respect your time, and we appreciate you being with us. And for the listeners, she is actually cooking and talking about this at the same time. I caught her in the kitchen, and she is cooking a wonderful chicken dish and talking about all this wonderful stuff. So we appreciate your time and your multitasking. We have one last question for you before we let you
Okay.
go, and this may be the hardest. If you had to respond with just a one word or phrase that would sum up for the listeners what the word teacher means to you, what would that be?
Creator of tomorrow.
Gay, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our program,
Pleasure talking to you.
and best of luck with your two resources coming out.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Gay Sue spoke to us from her kitchen while she had a chicken breast meal cooking with some fresh farm tomatoes. Delicious. If you want more information about Gay Sue's books, you can visit Heinemann online or visit the blog spot, theteacherslifeblog.blogspot.com, and I will post some links up there for you to visit. That's it. I will see you guys later. Bye.